This is Indiana Public Radio News. Good morning. I'm Stan Sollers. As we have reported earlier in the year, dozens of Ball State faculty opted to take the university's voluntary early retirement incentive plan. Those who satisfied the plan's qualifications will receive an incentive of 125% of their annual teaching salary atop their accrued retirement benefits. For a faculty member making $80,000, the one-time payment would be $100,000 before taxes. Some critics say this is a reduction in force move by the university, replacing more expensive veteran faculty members with younger, lesser-paid professors and part-time instructors. Some fear that this will hurt Ball State's faculty institutional academic experience level and its institutional memory. Returning this week to cover this topic and others is Ball State President Jeff Mearns. President Mearns, welcome back.
It's good to be with you, Stan. Good morning to you and your listeners.
Good morning to you as well. Glad you're here. Well, how would you respond to critics with those points?
Well, so first of all, I would describe them as skeptics, and healthy skepticism is often constructive. So it's not a reduction in force. There's a big difference between our program and a RIF. A RIF, as you know, is mandatory, which means the administration chooses the positions and often chooses the people. As you recognized, our program is entirely voluntary, and our program is pretty generous. And you know, we are not going to be replacing these retiring faculty with adjuncts. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to hire faculty for the next 20 to 30 years. We're hiring faculty who will teach in the programs of the future. We will be hiring faculty who are teaching in the modalities of the future. You know, the provost actually says this program, we call it a voluntary early retirement incentive program, but the provost calls it the Faculty of the Future program. And so we are providing a pretty generous benefit, as you described, and we're doing that while honoring senior faculty who have already served the university and our students for many years.
Some faculty are skeptical and fear what's next. So what, if anything, is next?
Well, I'm not sure what they are concerned about when they say what next. What I would say is I would encourage everyone, you know, I talk frequently about our strategic plan, and our strategic plan explains in pretty clear terms, succinct and clear terms, what we intend to do in the future. And so we're going to continue to develop programs that align with the interests of our current and future students. We're going to continue to develop programs that align with the professional opportunities that our students can secure after they graduate. That has been our mission for over 100 years, and that will continue to be our mission. And so this will give us, as I say, the opportunity to honor the faculty who have served us and our students so well, and enable us to hire faculty who will serve the next 20 to 30 years of our students.
I think of what I've heard on campus, and for the radio audience that does not know, I teach full-time. Radio is part-time for me. And so what I've heard some people say across campus is that they're wondering if the university's financial position is being challenged right now because of the pandemic. Are the university's funds okay?
Yeah, we're in a very strong financial position. In fact, as part of this program, to fund this program, we're investing more than $10 million in the incentive part of the program. And we're able to do that because of the strong long-term financial position that we're in. And, you know, we consistently are evaluated by outside rating agencies like Moody's and Standard & Poor's, and we consistently receive stable ratings, notwithstanding the fact that Moody's and S&P regularly say that higher education as a whole, as an entire enterprise, is not necessarily stable and is often negative. So we're in a strong position, and that's what gives us the resources to make this investment as we continue to implement our strategic plan.
Well, we'll switch over to summer teaching now. And summer teaching at Ball State was once a way for faculty to augment their annual teaching paychecks. It was even used to help recruit faculty to campus. Many have relied on it for years for not only helping their savings accounts, but also with smaller classes to try new methods in the classrooms and labs and studios that would be later woven into fall and spring semesters. Under-enrolled classes, typically those with fewer than 10 students, used to be green for go, They were green flagged, even with 3 to 5 students. Last summer, many of those under-enrolled classes were disallowed. What is the outlook for this summer? Because I have some skin in this game myself, I must say, because I have taught summertime and I have a class that I would like to see go for this summer. The university must pay overheads on dark and empty classrooms as well as lit and open but under capacity classrooms. So is there something about the school not allowing small summer classes to be taught?
Well, so our current policy is now enshrined in the university handbook for faculty and employees, and it sets a minimum enrollment for classes at 10 students. And that policy was promulgated and approved several years ago. But your question, Stan, kind of answers itself, which is that in the past, summer teaching was driven in part by the financial interests of our faculty. And now this new policy, which was developed in consultation with our faculty and is administered by department chairs and deans and provosts, ensures that we're making decisions based upon what's in the best interest of our students. So we have this policy about setting a minimum enrollment of 10 students in a class, but department chairs have the authority to grant exceptions to that policy if there's a compelling need to serve our students. Again, not about the financial interests of our faculty, but what's in the best interests of our students. And, you know, a clear majority of our students now want summer courses online. I think it's more than 80% of the summer courses are online. And that's in our students' interest because it enables them to continue to earn credits towards their degree while they're able to stay closer to home and work to be able to earn the money necessary to fund their education.
And speaking of enrollments, how is fall enrollment looking compared to the last 3 fall semesters here during this pandemic period?
Well, I'm encouraged by the preliminary data. Presently, we're projecting a healthy increase in new undergraduate freshmen compared to fall 2021. Our target is 3,500 new freshmen. That's a 6% increase from fall 2021 and would be comparable to what we had in fall 2020. I'm frankly cautiously optimistic, a bit hopeful that we might even exceed that 3,500 target. We're also seeing a nice rebound in new on-campus graduate students, and we're also seeing a nice rebound in both new international graduate students and new international undergraduate students. My principal concern about enrollment next year is about undergraduate retention. We see it both in the data and through anecdotal conversations with our students that the pandemic continues to take a toll on our current students, primarily in mental health and in their finances.
And we'll see if we can pick up on this topic in a couple of weeks and go from there. We are out of time for now. So, President Jeff Mearns, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Stan, and have a great day and a good weekend.
You as well. For IPR News, I'm Stan Sollers.